This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Now let's take it down to Luke Walton in the north section of the pit. Luke?
Yes, Ed, and standing right here now is Jimmy Rathman to tell us what happened to his car. Jimmy?
Nothing happened to the car. The car is running real good. I got sick from the heat. It's awful hot, and I was breathing fumes from the engine.
Here comes Farnelli Jones. He's fast as he gets around me here. By Roger McCluskey. McCluskey spins there in the corner. Hold it. We've got one car going around him. He's sideways. The same bump that Eddie Sachs was. McCluskey right there. He's okay. He's sitting in his car. The cars are coming around him. We'll follow. See if it's all right. They're all going on the inside. McCluskey halfway through the turn, sideways. The exact same spot where Eddie Sachs was just a few minutes ago. Now they're running under the yellow flag. Jones went around us a moment ago. McCluskey passed it on the...
And there's a checkered flag for Parnelli Jones, the winner of the 1963 500-mile race.
And here is Pat Madan waving the checkered flag for Al Unser, winner of the 1971 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Johncock off the fourth turn. Mears is right behind him. Johncock, Mears makes a try. Johncock wins it by less than one-tenth of a second. Gordon Johncock has won his second 500.
The pace car is still on the racetrack. Let's see. It moves through corner number four. And Goodyear went around the pace car. He went around the pace car. The green flag is coming out. The pace car is now off the racetrack. We are under green at Indianapolis. We'll see what happens.
For a moment, all is right with the world. Danica Patrick leading the Indianapolis 500.
We draw closer to the 2010 Indianapolis 500. Highlights from 1953, 63, 71, the classic finish in 82, 95, and 2005, courtesy of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. Along with Kurt Cavan from the Indianapolis Star, I'm Kevin Lee. This is Trackside with Cavan and Kevin. Matt Hicks is our studio producer. One of the voices you heard there, Indianapolis people would recognize this voice. Those listening nationally on 1070thefan.com may not. Mike Ahern was a voice on the IMS radio network for many years, and I just saw Mike downstairs about an hour ago. He contributes to WIBC now. He was the longtime television anchor of the CBS affiliate, Wish TV, here in Indianapolis, retiring, it may be as long as 10 years ago. It doesn't seem that long, but it's been at least several years since Mike retired from Channel 8. But in the 60s and maybe through the early 70s, he was on the radio network as a turn announcer.
Since this airs within the building, we'll make the pitch that if he's still here, he needs to come up. Because, you know, these people kind of wander in and out.
Except we're not on in the speakers on the fourth floor, and that's where I saw him.
Okay,
so chances of him actually hearing us are slim. But it's always interesting to hear those, and Matt will continue to put those together as we move closer to the Indianapolis 500 on May 30th. Before I forget, I want to make sure everybody is aware that we will be on location tomorrow night, first of at least a pair of shows this month, out and about. We'll be at the Pit Stop Barbecue in Brownsburg coming up tomorrow night. I'll be there at 6 o'clock for my portion of the talk of Gasoline Alley. Donald Davidson will be here in the studio, and then Kurt will join me on location at 7 o'clock tomorrow night for Trackside. This is in Brownsburg. Again, it's 932 East Main Street, 136 or Crawfordsville Road, depending on what you want to call it. It's on the north side of the street. If you check my Twitter account, someone sent me, there's a new Twitter app, I don't know what you would call it, Twitter function that works a bit like Google Maps or MapQuest or something like that, and they have actually put the location down there. So I retweeted that from 2 or 3 hours ago. So KevinLee23 would allow you an easy way to find the exact location if you're not from Brownsburg and want to join us tomorrow night. They'll have USAC midgets on site, dinner specials, cars the kids can get into. Looking forward to a great evening.
I think so. I there's nothing I like more than being out and about like that. And I think that'll be our first public show, won't it?
First time we've been allowed out of the building. Is there a reason for that? Very possibly. So we want this to go well because we'd like to be let out of the building again at other times. So join us tomorrow night in Brownsburg. Okay. Let's get to the story of the day. You had one more thing to mention?
No, we were listening to the 95 race. Had a great chat today with Scott Pruitt.
Oh.
He was going to be a man of the hour and had a slippage in Raul Boisel's debris from a blown engine, smacked the wall, and really considers that to be his lowest moment in racing. It's his long and decorated career, the chance to win the Indy 500 and then have it taken away in the last 20 laps or so was a really heartbreaking moment. And it was, you know, interesting. We were talking about him yesterday, and then he called about something else this afternoon, and it really was as heartbreaking for him as I suspected. And time has not healed that. Sometimes, like the Butler basketball team, I think we'll look back 20 years from now and say what a great moment that was, and it's just unfortunate the shot didn't go in, or either shot didn't go in. That's not the way Scott Pruitt feels about the 95 Indy 500. It was heartbreaking.
Well, and he didn't even finish second, you know, which is something that Butler always has.
Right.
So it's an all-or-nothing kind of situation for him. The news today is from your story today in the Indianapolis Star. Randy Bernard, the new CEO of the Indy Racing League, wants the reference of IRL banished. Quote, "We need to blow up IRL. Needs to be known as IndyCar. To the purest, IRL is a negative acronym. We need to get away from using it. We need some sort of press statement to show that IRL is dead. We need to let people understand we're trying to change," and I actually saw that quote. I cut and pasted out of "My Name is Earl, My Name is IRL," so I don't know what Jeff would do with his website if the reference IRL is no longer allowed, but that's a side issue. I understand. Well, before I give my thoughts, just your reaction. You talk to him. You have the story. What do you make of this?
Well, it's a little bit silly, I think, because the sanctioning body as an entity needs a name. It can't be the IndyCar Series, because the IndyCar Series is a separate entity within the Indy Racing League. Let's go to the NASCAR side. Most people are really familiar with that. NASCAR, you have NASCAR, and then you have three groups underneath: the Sprint Cup Series, the Nationwide Series, and the Craftsman Truck Series. In this case, you've got the Indy Racing League as the banner. Then you've got the IndyCar Series, the Eyes Out IndyCar Series, and the Firestone Indy Light Series. Those are two separate entities. You cannot call it, unless you just called it IndyCar, I suppose they could formally switch the name to IndyCar. And that kind of was how it was known for quite a number of years. It could be just IndyCar, but I don't see any reason to remove Indy Racing League from the dockets, the contracts, and so forth. To me, that could just be in the background. Maybe what he's saying is we just like to remove it from the vernacular and that we wouldn't discuss IRL. But I'm telling you, they spent so much time beating Indy Racing League into the minds of people over the first 12 to 14 years of its existence that it's going to be difficult to do that.
Is he wanting to get rid of the phrase Indy Racing League as well? Because this is out of his control. IRL is still used sometimes in derision, but oftentimes in newspaper headlines. Now, the Star has changed. This conversation has come up before. People have said you should stay away from IRL. And to be honest, I cannot recall if this has been a mandate for broadcasters associated with the leagues, but it's been my understanding. I have stayed away from the phrase IRL.
So why have you stayed away from it?
That's what I can't swear to, whether I was told to or whether it's just like what Randy talked about, that it's probably best that we go in another direction and refer to it as just Indy Racing League. Don't use the initials IRL, and we refer to it as the Indy Racing League, or simply, and really the only time you need to do that is if you're referencing Brian Barnhart, the president of the Indy Racing League, president of competition, or Terry Angstad and so forth. But otherwise, we are talking about the Izod IndyCar Series champion, the Firestone Indy Lights champion. There's really no reason to throw in Indy Racing League into that. But I think that has been a concerted effort internally, but you can only control what happens on the IMS radio network. You can maybe get the television broadcasters to go along. They can make a suggestion to you, but if someone, for example, wants to poke fun at them, wants to be negative, they're going to use this to their benefit if they feel that's the case. The only way to get rid of it is to get rid of Indy Racing League.
And a couple things are clear. One, this was a concerted effort beginning last year, because I remember John Griffin, who no longer works for the series as the public relations vice president. I remember him coming to me probably in September and saying, could we stop using IRL? And
that's probably where I got mine from, yeah.
And so I wondered about that, and the only reason that I went along with it and I thought it made sense is because we weren't talking about the Indy Racing League. We were talking about the IndyCar series. I mean, I wasn't writing a story about the sanctioning body. I was writing a story about the series at which Scott Dixon and Dario Franchitti and others participate in. So I agreed with that. And now I think what it's come up from time to time is that headline writers, they're trying to fit short words together. And sometimes IRL fits where IndyCar does not. And the other thing is, by just talking about this, by kind of admitting that it rubs people wrong, what you're saying is true. Those that want to be critical or poke fun at the league are going to use it all the more. It's like saying, like you telling people at school, if you're in, when you're school
don't
age,
call me that.
Don't call me Kev. Yeah,
that's it. That's all you're going to hear.
And so I think, you know, he's opened a little bit of can of worms in that discussion by throwing that out there that it bothers them. But it's clear, because I receive probably, I don't know, 150, 200 emails today on this subject alone, and it was clear right down the middle. People were either, I'm totally in Randy Bernard's camp on this one, or what's the big deal? And it was 50-50 split on this, and it's pretty close to, I would just venture to say, without too much of a risk here, that those that wanted it gone were Champ Car supporters. Those that wanted or didn't see the problem with it were Indy Racing League supporters during the split. I'm just personally, it doesn't make a difference, because I'm going to call it the IndyCar series when talking about the competition that involves the drivers I mentioned.
Here's the only alternative that I see, because you're right, it's the sanctioning body. Could you change the name of the sanctioning body to IndyCar, and then it becomes the IZOD Cup or something like that, the IndyCar IZOD series, the IndyCar Firestone Light series. IndyCar Firestone Indy Lights would be a little bit
perhaps
redundant.
But I tell you what they do like. I do like IZOD IndyCar series.
That rolls pretty good.
Because it's not only smooth off the tongue in that respect, but it identifies exactly what you are. If you're calling this the IZOD Cup, in fact, you know, some years in CART, there was some uncertainty about what kind of cars those really were if you weren't really paying attention. By calling it the IZOD IndyCar Series, you've got Indy, you've got IndyCar, and you've got Series, and you've got the Series sponsor. To me, it meets all the qualifications.
Yep, IndyCar does need to be in there, because you would get another new issue if you referred to it as the IZOD Series or the IZOD Cup. Sprint Cup can get away with that, but they still, most people,
don't
casual
call it,
fans, just call it NASCAR. They
correct.
Think NASCAR is Cup.
It's not.
It's not, but that's what most people, if you say NASCAR to most people, they're thinking it's the cars that run in the Daytona 500, that run in the Brickyard 400.
Correct.
So it's more for the hardcores that refer to it as the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, the NASCAR Nationwide Series. So we'll talk more about that. A couple emails on that. We'll address that again as we come up. I thought this is worthy of mentioning. I've seen several people post the 10-day forecast for Speedway, and it looks good. It does not look good for the next couple of days. There's a chance of rain the next couple of days, 50% or so. But by Friday, mostly cloudy, 69, 20% chance of rain, 20% chance on Saturday, 67. Mostly cloudy, 20% chance. There's always going to be a 20% chance
of
rain. So
let's
don't
just stop
think
this
about that
because
too much. 75 on Sunday.
This is going to be changing multiple times. Let's read it Friday, and then we'll know what.
In reality, we should read it Saturday at about 11:45. That's the only time it will really hold a lot of weight. All right, want to get into some other things on the show tonight. Several good emails to get to. Davey Hamilton is joining us in a little bit as well. So stick with us. It's Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan. Trackside continues on 1070 The Fan with Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. Our friend Davey Hamilton joins us now. Were you listening to the commercials, Davey?
Man, he's pretty sensitive guy there, isn't he?
We've got to get you some commercials. Right before that, we heard Mike Conway. Who are you endorsing?
Yeah, well, I'm HP, man. Buy HP computers. They're the best there is.
There you go. There's the plug. And Kingdom Racing as well. We've known about that for a while, but the release came out yesterday. So that's another part of your package as well for the HP Lusso Dragon number 21 car. We want to talk about getting back on the track. At Kentucky last week, Weepers knocked us out again. But I understand you did get a chance to get in the car at Texas Motor Speedway late last week.
Yeah, it was good. Actually, Dixon, Briscoe, Marco, and I were the four guys able to go to Texas and cut some laps, and it was good. Obviously, my first time back since, you know, in a competitive car since 2001 at Texas. And, man, I forgot how fast you go around that place. It definitely gets your attention how fast you go. But the good thing is we got up to speed fairly quick. We ran over 160 laps and got pretty comfortable, but you know, still got a bit to go on those Ganassi Target guy or Ganassi Penske guys for sure.
Is it overstating to say you had some bumps going into the first turn, the second turn, the first time through there, or was it a little bit nerve wracking?
You know, once I got up to speed, you know, the first time, the only time I thought about it is I went through there up to speed the first time, and I thought, man, I was going this fast in that wreck half, but I didn't remember it being that fast, you know. And then after that, it was, you know, it was right to business, and that was really the last time I thought about it. But for that one time through there, first time wide open, it, you know, it got my attention on, you know, how fast that I was going when that accident definitely happened.
Did it make it easier that you've been back to that track so many times, and you've been on the track, not at full speed, but you've been in the two-seater before?
Without a doubt. I mean, obviously, we're not going to speeds, but it always helps knowing, you know, how to get on the track and what it feels like and the banking. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a 6 year, actually, you know, what would have been 8 years now since, or almost 9 years since the accident happened. So it was refreshing to know that at least the track wasn't strange. It was the speeds was difficult in an actual race car. So it was cool. It was, it did take long to get the speed. Obviously, that track is, you know, it's one of the easier mile-and-a-half tracks because of the banking there. But I'll tell you, one thing I noticed in these cars different from the past is, you know, you do have to get the handling better now in these cars than back in, you know, in the early 2000, 2001, where we had more power and actually more speed there. But it seemed like it was easier to get the car handle there than it is today.
What will transfer from what you did at Texas to coming to Indianapolis?
You know, I don't think anything as far as you know, what we're doing to the car, speed of the car. I think it helped me personally a lot, just getting used to, you know, driving again and how the car shifts. And, you know, the steering wheels and these things are just like being in the cockpit of a jet. You know, there's so many buttons and numbers and pages and things to remember and to know what they mean. And so that definitely helped me out. So as far as sitting in the car, being comfortable, getting up to speed, that's all going to be a big positive going into Indy on Saturday.
Davey Hamilton is joining us. He's in the number 21 car with HP sponsorship and Kingdom Racing as well with Lusso Dragon. You were involved with Rafa Matos at Kansas. What is that relationship like? What is your role, especially on the ovals with that team throughout this season?
Well, hopefully it is, you know, to help them, you know, gain a little more speed. They've been struggling a little bit early on this year with some good results, by the way, though. You know, I mean, they came out of Brazil with a nice result, and St. Pete with a nice result. And so they've had some decent results, but been struggling a bit on just the pure speed and qualifying efforts. And hopefully with the ovals, between Rafa and I, we could go out with different packages now and try to excel on you know, gaining speed for the team and not just having him on his own trying different things. And, you know, we should be able to hopefully gain on setups and gain on speed twice as fast with both of us doing it. And he's a great guy. I mean, Rafa, he's a great race driver. He's a lot of fun. And this team's, you know, it's been everything I expected to come into it. They've been very good to work with.
What kind of realistic goals do you have for the month? I mean, I know you're going to say you'd like to win a race, but the reality is that it's pretty slim. I mean, that's slim, but that's kind of a long shot.
Yeah, sure it is a long shot for sure. I mean, you know, when I show up, you know, in race, this would be my, you know, fourth race, IndyCar race, all at Indy since my comeback, and that's it. And I'm racing against guys that race week in, week out, and, you know, and by the way, they're all good race drivers, too. I mean, the series has, you know, really good race drivers. So, you know, I obviously there's opportunity. I mean, if you're in the race, you have the opportunity to win. The odds go down, you know, just because of, you know, you got by the way, if you check Roger Penske, he's got 15 rings. that tells you who you might want to drive for. And then you look at Ganassi, who, you know, has been such a powerhouse over the, you know, the last few years, or, you know, quite a few years actually, that, you know, those two teams are going to be very, very hard to beat. And if you're not driving one of their cars, it's going to be difficult, but, you know, but it is open. It is open and you never know what can come out because strategy plays such a big part. But, you know, I'm hoping for a top 10. I mean, I think a lot of people say that too, Kurt, is, you know, if you come out of Indy 500 with a top 10, that's good. And unfortunately, I was able to do that in 07 on my comeback. And, you know, we came close to it again in 08. And, you know, hopefully this year we can do it again.
Is there a movie in the works or being discussed about your comeback?
There's been some discussion about that, Kevin. I know there's definitely been discussion. I don't know where it stands today, to be honest with you. We've talked about it with several people, and I know there's some people out there interested. We'll just see what happens.
A win would probably ramp up that discussion.
Yeah, it would definitely ramp it up. When, I mean, I think it would be no brainer at that point to go ahead and pull forward with it and do it, and you know, make it a little bit easier on my side too. Thinking there's more of a story there than just, you know, my life, or you know, kind of a cap on the comeback, I guess. But we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, expecting anything out of it right now, but who knows what could come out of it.
It's a great story. I would love to see it happen. I think there's enough to the story already that would make it captivating, even beyond those of us inside the race group. Veterans noon to 2 this Saturday, and then rookies 2 to 6. In the past, that's include refresher opportunities. When are you allowed to be on track this weekend?
Yeah, I'm noon to 2 on Saturday and Sunday, and then obviously Monday it's a green light for everybody. But it's going to be nice to have those few hours for, you know, I know Townsend Bell and Thomas Schechter and who else, Paul Tracy and Anthony Foyt, and there's quite a few of us that are going to take advantage of it. But the most impressive thing right now that I'm seeing is how competitive I think it's going to be. I mean, we have, you know, Anna signed up yesterday, so I think that's 37, maybe 38 drivers. I'm not exactly sure, but up in that area. And, you know, last year being the closest qualifying field in the history of the 500, I expect that could be broken again this year. And I think, you know, it's going to be a very challenging year just to get in this race and be competitive. So it's going to be, and then 1 week with the new format, 1 week of practice, 1 week of qualifying should create some excitement. And hopefully it plays out in our favor somehow, but it's going to be interesting.
Hey, do you think it causes a problem in the back half of the field in terms of preparation with only the 1 week if you don't have the extra time? I mean, I know those cars in the back are traditionally, you know, focused on just making the race, but now they really have a limited number of hours to kind of do both, be ready for the qualifying session and the race.
Ah, man, Kurt, you brought up a good point. I've thought about that many times because it could be a big issue, you know, as well as I do. The first week was always qualifying setups. I mean, that was the deal. We all worked on qualifying. Even if we didn't make it even in the first weekend, for example, 2 years ago there was rain on the second day, and so I was a third-day qualifier. Basically, it was a second-day qualifier, but it was a second weekend. But then next week, you know, I worked on race setups to get ready for and be prepared for the race. But now you have to take this 1 week and be fast. So, you know, the Penske's and Matthews and Andretti, you know, for those guys that have speed right now, they don't need to worry a lot about getting in the race, although they're going to be shooting for that pole and the money that goes with the front row. But then they got to fit in race setups. And I think that the guys that are struggling for speed, they will have a zero race setup because they're going to be working on qualifying setups the whole time. I think it could be an issue in the race. We'll just have to wait and see. But I do think there are some negatives with everything, right? And that's one of the things that could be a negative with this new format.
Davey Hamilton set to get back to work in the race car coming up this Saturday with the number 21 HP Kingdom Racing car for Lusso Dragon Racing. Davey, good to visit with you. We'll see you this weekend.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Stick with us. We'll get to your emails coming up. Kevin at 1070thefan.com. We've got room for more. This is Trackside on 1070 The Fan. Trackside would like to thank one of our partners, Indiana Tobacco Prevention and Cessation. Make the decision to quit smoking. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW for more information. Email questions, Kevin at 1070thefan.com. Twitter, Kevin Lee 23. I've actually got it up if you want to send something I will actually remember to look at that here at some point in the next little while. We can go through those as quickly as possible.
By the way, Kevin really is driven by the fact he has 999 followers. He's dying to get that.
Who's going
to
be 1,000? And I lose them on occasion, so I always wonder if did I put something that offended someone, and they've dropped me immediately. But the numbers always fluctuate. I don't know if that's my followers dying or their accounts being suspended or exactly how that works.
It is heartbreaking to him.
It is very, very heartbreaking. Okay, this is from Ellen. The most updated entry list for the 500 has some changes. Rael Letterman has taken the 17 off. Also, Foyt removed the 16. The only three remaining TBAs, and she wrote this a couple of days ago, 25, 27, 98. 25 we now know is Anna Beatrice, the 27 with AFS, the 98 with Curb 3G. So we now have 37 car-driver combinations. We have talked before, we don't believe the 27 is going to happen. It's still on there, on the entry list. What about the 98?
I still think there's going to be a car 98, and I think it'll be Jacques Lazier at this point. I think that's your best bet.
He has driven with that team in the past.
Correct.
So that would be a nice combination there, and I would think we'd been hearing Richard Antonucci in that regard, but with the competition to make the race, I would think that would be in their best interest to put a veteran in there to give them a better opportunity.
I would agree with that.
The other thing we've talked about before, we've gotten a lot of questions about this. There's going to be bumping. There's going to be four or five. So let's talk about, again, who is on our bubble. And I've made a list. I'm surprising you with this. So I'll give you my roster here. You can take a look if you like. But here is the group. I've got a list of seven. And
so
if
five.
We included Jacques Lazier, it would be probably eight. Here are the people that I think that are less than certain, some simply because of their experience. Bertrand Baguette, Mario Romancini with Conquest.
Those are my first two concerns, by the way.
Yeah. Simona De Silvestro, but I think she's going to figure it out. She's been so good. She's been good. It's not accurate to say so good when you're finishing in 17th, 18th, 19th, and so forth. But I think she has had some impressive moments. I think she'll get it figured out.
I'll allow you to put Simona on here for now.
That's why it's in a list of eight.
Okay.
And then it would be pared down to five. Sebastian Saavedra, rookie, a first-time team. I still think that he's probably going to be okay. Anna Beatrice, fourth car on that team that had difficulty getting John Andretti into the race last year.
But that's because he hit the fence and they were behind.
True, true. But that's someone, would you not put her in that list
no,
of
I would.
Eight or so?
Okay, you got five.
Milka Duno. Don't need to speak on that anymore. Although, well, I still won't be surprised if she makes the race because she has qualified not near the back on ovals. She's been close to mid-pack on the oval. So by herself, I think that Milka probably has a pretty good chance. And then I'm also putting Jay Howard on that list too.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have to put one of those Sarah Fisher cars, and Sarah would probably not be the one of the two you'd put. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's seven
and
cars.
And I'll add Jacques.
Yeah, Jacques's going
to
struggle.
No disrespect to Jacques, but that team on the ovals had a lot of problems last year being quick.
And I would say of those eight, the three I would feel most comfortable with are Simona, Jay Howard, and Anna Beatrice. And the reason Anna Beatrice, and I'm only saying that assuming nobody crashes all week. Because if anybody crashes, I was going to ask Hamilton that. We just kind of, you know, I didn't really want to put the kiss of death on him. But if you have a crash on Thursday or Friday, I'm telling you, unless you're a good team, a high-level, regular team, you're going to miss the race. It's just that competitive, and people are going to be that thrashed for getting programs together. Because very few of these teams are one-car operations. Most of them have multiple cars, and if you have multiple concentration levels, remember, none of your cars will have qualified by the time, if that car crashes on Friday, you have none of your cars in the race at that point. So you have to focus on car one. You know, like, let's just say it's Anna Beatrice. If she crashes on Friday, Dryan Reinbold, still the priority has to be getting the first two cars, the regulars yep. in the race and then getting Scheckter in before they can even try to fix her car and be ready to go. And they're probably, that team will probably get all three in the first 24 cars. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Wilson or Conway falls into that 25, 26, the Sunday qualifiers. You're talking about asking a lot of a team to repair a car on Friday and then still get the rest of their cars in the show.
From Jeff in Indianapolis, Kurt, you've been providing tips for newbies attending the 500. Don't forget to tell them to listen to the radio broadcast while attending. I swear I didn't write this. Jeff did, from Indianapolis. Jeff says, without the radio coverage, you can't get all the insights, such as who's moving through the pack, who's having trouble and why, who just became good friends with a safer Barry. It might be antisocial, but those around you will be seeking your knowledge.
No, that's true. Let's not let you off the hook here. Who are your three that you're going to say are going to make it? Here's the list. I just made a better list. Who are your three that are going to make it of those eight?
That are going to make it.
If those are your last eight, according to the NCAA tournament bubble teams, who are the three that will make it? Who are the three first in?
Simona.
Yeah, I think she's going to make it.
Yeah, I do too.
She's going to be in a 27, 28 range.
Jay Howard. And then it's...
it's going to be close.
It's between the lady. And in reality, I think it's between Duno and Beatrice. I'd still be surprised if Beatrice didn't make it. And I think... I would have thought that Romancini and Saavedra... in general, just for example, if you ask me in March, are these guys going to make the race? Yeah. But you have to start looking at, well, somebody's not going to make it.
Well, let me have that list here just a second. Let's assume here's...
So,
okay, we don't have to pin you down, but Baguette is a regular. Romancini is a regular. Simona is a regular. Milkaduno is a... There's four...
That's
regulars.
A big check that somebody's writing for.
Somebody's writing a $1.2 million check.
Well, the easiest to say so far, from what I've seen, that's not going to make it is Bertrand Baguette.
Yeah.
Who's been very slow. That's the only one that I feel has a real long shot, and probably Jacques is next, although maybe with his experience. And they were close with Stanton Barrett last year, were they not?
I think so, and yeah. Remember, that team
so
does
that
have...
far off.
That team has experience, both in the driver and the engineers and the mechanics.
It is going to be close. I go back to what you said. Who has, of those people, who has a setback? Some sort of an issue, and it can go beyond a crash. Who has a setback? Does weather inhibit those part-time teams more than, say, Conquest? Will that be any advantage to Conquest if there is... a decent amount of weather, and there's not as much preparation time. I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Not unless it rains 5 days, because you should be able to get what you need done in a day and a half or so.
A couple of the other topics of the day, Anthony Foyt's going to have a baby. That was
Talk of the Town. By the way, Kathy was my 1,000th follower.
How about that?
Yeah, she's a listener. She writes the Talk of Our Town in the Indianapolis Star.
Yeah, you got that right. It's Our Town, not The Town.
Talk of Our Town?
Our Town.
Okay. Two times I got it correct?
Probably.
Good.
The other big news of the day, well, it's not big news necessarily, but Ryan Briscoe tested today at Virginia International Raceway.
I saw that.
In a stock car. Now, he did this last year, ran with David Stremme, a teammate within the Penske organization. Today, he ran with Justin Allgaier, and this was a road course benchmark for Justin, really, to have somebody who's pretty good on the road courses say, you know, you need to pick it up in this corner or that corner. Justin's not a road course specialist. Ryan is truly terrific on the road courses, certainly by NASCAR standards, and very good by IndyCar standards as well. So that was interesting to me, and it probably raised a few flags if people saw Ryan's tweet that he was testing a stock car today. That's why.
I kind of thought it was just one of the benefits of being with an IndyCar team that has a Cup team, that it's kind of cool. You get an opportunity to do this. You can, in this case, show somebody something. If the schedules ever worked out, you might wonder at some point, would you put a Ryan Briscoe in one of the Penske cars on the two road courses?
I would.
I would, too. If the schedule works out, I don't know if if IndyCar is racing that weekend this year or not, or in the future. But if it ever
did,
I'd put one of those guys in. But it depends on where they are in the standings.
Yes, you're going to.
So they can't be near the 35 cutoff, or they can't be close to the chase. They've got to be 21st, something like that.
And
right?
even there, you're probably not going to do it because you're not going to upset the sponsorship relationships that you've got if Hornish is driving for a particular company and so forth.
All right, more of your emails to come in just a moment. Kevin at 1070thefan.com. It's Trackside with Kevin and Kevin. Trackside, 1070 The Fan. We'd like to thank one of our partners, Indiana Tobacco Prevention and Cessation. Make the decision to quit smoking. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW for more information. Kurt, it's time now to play this week's Inspire Indy 500 Fun Fact Challenge. That's rhetorical. You're really not allowed to play. Although you could go to Indy500Coverage.com and sign up, but do not speak the answer now. Answer the following fun fact correctly, and you could win tickets to Community Day and also be qualified for the race weekend grand prize, a two-night stay at the Omni Severn Hotel, breakfast for two, and also two tickets to the 500 Festival Parade and the Indianapolis 500-mile race, courtesy of Indianapolis Downtown Inc. Downtown Indianapolis, amazingly always new. This week's fun fact challenge is, what organization originally sanctioned the Indianapolis 500 prior to USAC and the Indy Racing League? To play the Inspire Indy 500 Fun Fact Challenge, go to the Fun Fact Challenge link at Indy500Coverage.com. And if you don't know the answer, a handy research link is right there to Inspire, Indiana's virtual library, free to all Hoosiers, right on the contest page, Indy500Coverage.com.
Do you know the answer?
I wrote the question, so yes, I do. Yes. Thomas Schechter, apparently, according to his Twitter, will be throwing out the first pitch at the Indianapolis Indians game tomorrow. And then, he says, went to a batting cage today, hit some 100-mile-per-hour pitches.
I don't believe it.
100 kilometers, as Matt said, might be a little bit more accurate. That's possible. I want to know the pitching machine he's going to that's throwing 100. I'm not sure if the Indians have one that will throw 100.
Yeah, he's
so good for him.
Fast driver, big talker.
Yep.
That's what I'm going to call
him. I'm sure
it
looked like it was 100. Part two of Jeff's point about, and again, I highly encourage you to listen to the radio broadcast during the race. It is actually one of the things that I always mention when I do tours with people who are not race fans. If you want to have, if you're just there, you know, to have a good time, then you don't need it. But one, you want to protect your ears, so you might as well have an idea what's going on. And two, even if you're savvy, you're not going to know what's happening when things get out of a sequence with pit stops and you're going to wonder what's happened. So always recommend that. In the race this year, if you can always find the radio broadcast on a scanner, but it'll be on 1070 The Fan. If for some reason that's not coming in clear enough, it's on FM again this year, 93.1 WIBC. 93 WIBC will air the Indianapolis 500 as well. Part two of Jeff's question, I know this has been mentioned before, probably by Shane from Australia, but we need to get Randy Bernard to consider having the last race of the year on the road course at IMS. At this time, very few people outside of Indy care about the IndyCar Championship, so reward us lifelong fans with a second IndyCar race at the world's greatest racing facility. There'll be more people in the stands than for any other race other than the 500, and since most of the teams are based here, costs relatively low. Just make sure you hold it on an off weekend for the Colts. Problem there is that NFL schedule doesn't come out until April, and your schedule would have to come out 6 months prior to that, so you're never going to know. Now, maybe you could work with the NFL on that, and I suspect the Colts have the ability to blackout dates and say, we need to be on the road because of the building in this particular case. So that's a possibility, although the NFL is going to schedule things when they want to schedule them. I like what he's saying, and I respect what he's saying, and that's a good thought that this is where people would be most interested in it. I think the other issue people would have, though, would be finishing outside of an oval. I think a lot of people would like to see the championship finish on an oval. And you have a chance of it being a little bit chilly, as we've seen with Formula One here.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to argue against that, and I think there are a few to argue it for it.
It's worth talking about.
Anybody who's thrown out the extra race, I've always thought that that's, you know, the road course race is not necessary in this market. But I do think you can capitalize with some sponsors. I do think there would be people in this community who sponsor the Indy 500 or maybe who just want to find an alternative event to be involved with. I think it has some merit. Now, the reality is you're going to have to stage that race pretty deep into October, at least the second week of October, before it could be a championship event. We're doing Homestead this year on October, 2nd or 5th, something like that. That's about as early as you want to have your season champion crowned. And so you really are running into some risky weather. And, you know, what would you draw? I mean, I do think you could probably draw, I think you could draw 100,000 people.
I think you can draw 100,000 if it was 65 and sunny. If it's 43 and drizzling, not so much.
No, not so much.
I think you're talking 30 or 40,000 possibly, and a chance for a real crash at that point. You know, people always have said, a lot of people say you don't want to run the Indy cars on anything other than the oval.
I hear you, but
I think that's out the window. Yeah, I think that's out the door. Once the stock cars came, once Formula One has come, from a business standpoint, and the point you said too about the market, there are plenty of places, it appears, that are interested in either road or street course races. So the argument would go, why take one of those dates away and put it in a market that you already have? You're better served to go explore another market. That's a good argument. Another would be, though, why go somewhere where you're going to draw 35 or 40,000 when you can go to the track that you own and draw twice that?
Yeah, you're kind of exchanging money. That's the pro and the con here. You're also not getting the sanctioning fee from the facility, meaning all you're doing is changing hands on.
But you are keeping all the ticket revenue.
Well, I'm just saying there's some financial things to consider too. Mm-hmm. If you can take, the ideal thing is to have a good crowd and a good sponsored event at somebody else's location with somebody else's $1.5 million. That's the ideal situation, and to have a better shot at weather and attract new fans. Now, if those options are slim, then this becomes a pretty good option.
Keep in mind, next year is the 100th anniversary of the first Indianapolis 500, so you never know. People have talked before about some different possibilities there. This is, I'm sure, one of the things that they are talking about, and we'll see what comes of this. I'd still love to see a sports car race involved. I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
I'd rather have an Indy car race than a sports car race.
No, I would
mean
both. If you did them both. If you have to choose, then I would much prefer an Indy car race, and I don't think a sports car race is going to draw the 100,000 or 80,000.
It's not going to draw 50.
That you need to open up the facility and everything else.
One more thing, though, about it being a season finale. That is a commodity that you can sell as a league.
Yeah, true.
And that's one of those blocks of commodities that's worth something, and somebody will pay a little extra to have that event. If nothing else, they'll be able to draw from a sponsorship side, especially if they don't have a race already in this market.
We talked about this at the beginning of the show. Todd emails, super happy to hear that Randy Bernard is listening to the fans. I know that Kurt does not think this is a big deal, but outside Indianapolis, it really is. Dropping the name Indy Racing League and IRL is a huge step forward. What this does is it completes another step in achieving a truly merged series. IndyCar is who we all should be. I know that prior to the split, the sanctioning body was CART, but I can't remember the series being called anything but IndyCar, which is the way it should be today.
Well, it isn't because I live in Indianapolis or that I covered the Indy Racing League during its run here, because I covered CART prior to the formation of the Indy Racing League. But I just don't hang my association based off the name. That's all. I'll call it the IndyCar Series because that's what it is. I'm just not so hung up on it has to be go away for me to enjoy the event.
Marlin writes, I agree with Bernard when he said the name IRL needs to be removed because some people in press continue calling the IZOD IndyCar Series IRL. It's wrong because the IRL is just the name of the sanctioning body. One very smart suggestion to Randy: in the place of the name IRL, change the name to IRM, Indy Racing Management, would be a very smart change because nobody will be stupid to call the IZOD IndyCar Series of IRM. Well, they don't call it the IZOD IndyCar Series of IRL. Now,
well, he's just saying they wouldn't use the IRL. They wouldn't use IRM instead of IRL. It's just the bottom line is
it does have a negative connotation. It in some circles, right or wrong, it's associated. And some might say, though, it's associated. I saw this on some message boards today. It's associated with side by side finishes of well under a tenth of a second. So there are some positives that a lot of people take. So it is all perspective. I guess I have just read message boards too much because there is that group. And as you said, a lot of them are going to be the people that were on the side of things from CART that they use that as a dirty word.
I think you're absolutely right in saying the word has different meanings to different people. And usually you'll hear from people when they're upset rather than when they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
And like that last note there, when I think of the IRL, I think of the mile-and-a-half oval tracks. I think of 2x2x2x2x2 at Texas in 97, 98, some of the most horrifying and yet gratifying racing I've seen. Cars weaving in and out, wheel to wheel. It was dangerous. It was frightening. And it was thrilling all at once. And, you know, some of those days I missed because we just watched that Kansas race and I didn't see very many cars side by side. So, you know, he's right. Sometimes in some places there are people who see IRL as a very positive thing.
From Brad in Pennsylvania, since the track opened Saturday, when do the teams begin moving into their garage so they are ready?
Most of them will be solid by midday Friday.
But I believe they've already had the opportunity,
oh, yeah,
maybe starting either yesterday or Monday, to start moving in. But yeah, you don't need to be fully moved in until Friday. More emails for tomorrow night's show. That's the great thing. We'll be back again tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and we'll be at the Pit Stop Barbecue in Brownsburg. Join us for our first live broadcast of Trackside with Kevin and Kevin. And a lot of great things on hand. Race cars the kids can climb into. USAC midgets on site. Dinner specials as well. I'll be there starting at 6 for the Talk of Gasoline Alley. Donna will be in the studio still answering your nostalgic questions, and then we'll talk about the present after 7 o'clock tomorrow night on Trackside. Again, we'd like to thank one of our partners, Indiana Tobacco Prevention and Cessation. Make the decision to quit smoking. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW for more information. For Matt Hicks and Kurt Cavan, I'm Kevin Lee. Stay tuned. Mike King is up next with IndyCar Weekly here on 1070 The Fan, WFNI Indianapolis.